This is Yawa Radio.
A warm welcome to the Yawa Radio podcast. The Yawa Radio podcast is an opportunity again to listen to one of our inspirational, thought-provoking interviews that we have brought to the listeners of Yawa Radio. Yawa Radio is online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are your well-being and happiness radio station, bringing the feel-good feeling to every single day of the week. Check us out at yawaradio.co.uk. Now sit back and enjoy this podcast from the Yawa Radio team.
Welcome to Jordan Space. Every fortnight, you can join me, your host, Steve Phillip, alongside Danielle and Paul from the Jordan Legacy team, together with some very special guests for an hour of conversation, music, and above all, hope. Welcome to Jordan Space. This show does discuss themes of suicide, and we'd encourage you to take care of yourself by stepping away from the show at any point, should you find the content triggering or uncomfortable to listen to. For support, please visit our website, thejordanlegacy.com, and our help menu options. In 2023, working with our collaborative partner, Paul Vittles, the Jordan Legacy published what many have called a groundbreaking report. The report, titled Moving Towards a Zero Suicide Society and created in collaboration with dozens of individuals impacted professionally and personally by suicide, mapped out what a future zero suicide society would look like. For this week's show, we have a change to our usual format. Danny isn't joining us today, but Paul is. And in fact, Paul is our guest for this week's episode of Jordan Space. Welcome, Paul. Before we sort of explain what's happening today, I'd like to start by asking you about the opening track we've just played, because you've chosen the songs today. And that track is Wonderful Life by Black.
Wonderful Life, one of my favourite songs, is a song that I want to be played at my funeral. Some people might find this strange, but my wife and I have both discussed our funerals and what we like to have at our funerals and all the music we'd like to have played. But anyway, Wonderful Life, beautiful song, uplifting song. But what a lot of people don't know is that Colin Burncombe, who wrote that song, wrote that at the lowest point of his life. He'd just lost his first recording contract. He had separated from his wife. And he was homeless. He was sleeping on his manager's couch. And so from that almost despair that he was facing at that time, he managed to craft this incredible song. And I absolutely love it.
Look, let's get this out first of all, Paul. We better explain to our listeners what's going on. Where will we ship Danny off to? How come you're the guest? Tell us all what's going on.
Well, I don't know where you've shipped Danny off to, but I can answer the other questions. We've done so much with our action research project and our Zero Suicide Society model and everything that's going to come up in terms of the tour and the conference and the festival. We thought it would be useful to have a show which kind of summarizes all of that, brings it all together for people who aren't fully aware of what's going on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And look, for context, before we start talking about the tour and everything that's going on, I think it'd be really helpful for our listeners for you to explain about your own lived experience journey, both personally and professionally.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't talk a lot about my personal lived experience for a couple of reasons. One is that some of it is very uncomfortable and I just don't like talking about it. Some of it is very complex and messy. I don't have one of these neat kind of media-friendly soundbite stories. And it took me about 3 hours to explain about my lived experience of suicide and my mental illness. Also, it affects other people and it affects my wife in particular. And so I often don't talk about it publicly, because I want to protect others from some things that happened in the past. But I have opened up recently about a few things. I spoke at the Hope for Life conference, and I spoke publicly about losing my dad for the first time. I briefly mentioned it at a conference in Melbourne a few years ago, but this is the first time I'd properly talked about losing my dad. So there's a couple of stories, really, which I'll just keep it short. One is my first suicide loss experience was 1980. We lost a lot of blokes in our community, lost their jobs in the early 1980s. Big, hard, tough men, resilient men, no history of mental health, lost their jobs, had no prospect of getting a job, lost their identity, and sadly, many of them took their lives. And those who didn't went off to oil rigs and construction sites in Germany and the British Army in Northern Ireland. And just, you know, a lot of those took their lives a few years later. So horrific times there. I also had my own breakdown after my dad died and various other things happened. And I've had other crises and my son's had a crisis and we've lost a family member to suicide in August 2020. So sadly, it's affected us in many, many ways.
And I think it's really important to share this because I think there'll be many people out there that see you as a research fellow. They see the way you write, the way you share information relating to suicide and mental health, the way you challenge government. And yeah, it's really important to understand where that comes from.
You're absolutely right, Steve. The personal and professional are intertwined. You know, when I have my professional conversations with people about, for instance, suicide, not just being a mental health issue, I think back to those people we lost in the early 1980s where there was no mental health issue there at all, but sadly lots of people taking their lives. Then with my own personal issues with mental health, my own mental illness for the last 20 years, I know how that side of it feels as well, where it is about mental illness. And professionally, I initially kept out of that field because I was very happy doing other things and being involved in transformational change projects and research and community engagement. But I got pulled into it in 2013. So I've worked professionally in suicide prevention for 10 years. And to me, is about a transformational change challenge. It's a passionate professional desire, as well as the personal desire to change this because it can be changed.
Of course, much of that time that you worked in suicide prevention was spent in Australia.
Yeah, I had a real bad case of burnout in 2003-04, and I'd been working flat out running my own business and growing that up to 50 people. I'd been working, you know, all the hours that God sends for many, many years, and just got to a point where I just couldn't do it anymore and where it really kind of hit me hard. And my wife and I had a holiday in South Africa for a month, but came back from the holiday drained, really, realized it was more serious than I thought. So we had a complete lifestyle change and moved to Australia, which was amazing. And then, yeah, I started working with some of the suicide prevention charities out there. But it was after losing my dad, it was after my breakdown that I threw myself into it professionally in Australia, putting national strategies in place, setting up a national suicide prevention research fund, doing work into mentally healthy workplaces, psychologically safe workplaces through the Mentally Healthy Workplace Alliance. And then getting into Tech for Good initiatives, speaking at TEDx Sydney about digital life saving. So it was a real roller coaster ride with some big highs. And then thinking, are we really making a difference with these numbers? They're still at the same level. And then throwing myself into the global zero suicide community.
Now, of course, you returned to the UK, a number of grandchildren appearing on the scene, and decided it was time to come back to the UK, as you did in 2019. And early in 2020, of course, you and I met up.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing work with the Zero Suicide Alliance and a whole bunch of people in the UK. And you and I met, and I was running some wellbeing workshops for a network called One Team Gov, people working in government at all levels, local, regional, national government, all departments. A lot of people involved in transformation projects, digital transformation projects, service improvement projects. So we were doing some great work together. And I suggested doing events for World Suicide Prevention Day 2020. And they kind of went, we quite like the wellbeing workshops. We're not sure about suicide prevention, really. And so that's the point. We need to talk about this stuff and you need to talk about this stuff. And we set up a group of us to organize it. And famously, one of them said, yeah, I think this might be a niche event. This one, I'm not sure we'll get many people. It could be a niche event. And this phrase, the niche event, has haunted them ever since. Because when we put it up there with all these speakers, including yourself, Steve, and Debbie Rogers, we had 933 people registered for it. So that was by far the biggest event they'd ever had. Far from being a niche event.
During the time that you and I have worked together, we frequently referred to the term zero suicide society, not without some pushback at times, I've got to say. I've also heard you talk about reducing the annual suicide rates in the UK from the 6,000 plus as it is right now, as being one of the biggest transformational change challenges that we face as a nation. Can you expand on that?
Well, I mean, when I was in Australia, the number was 3,000 because it's 3,000 plus preventable deaths every year in Australia. In the UK, it's 6,000 preventable deaths. But it's the same problem, the same issue, same set of issues, and the same set of barriers that are stopping us getting those numbers down. And that became very apparent when I started doing this global work. And I started working with the zero suicide movement across the world and basically working in transformational change. Professionally, I thought, well, the obvious thing to do is to look where the numbers are coming down and what they're taking to get the numbers down. So I spoke to a few people in the field and said, right, you need to go to Detroit. That's where they've got the numbers down, reduce the numbers by suicides by 75% in 4 years. And, you know, you start getting into it. It's not rocket science, but they're just doing the right things and doing them well. You know, like asking people direct questions about if they've had thoughts of suicide or made plans, you know, asking those questions at an earlier stage and more often, you know, that's a part of it. Now, the term zero suicide was coined by Detroit because they wanted to challenge the conventional wisdom and not accept, not tolerate numbers of suicides, aim for zero. Why would you set a target of less than zero? And so they coined this term zero suicide, and it became a movement, it became a campaign to some extent, but it also became a framework, a philosophy, a set of tools, a set of manuals, you know, an evidence-based framework for getting the suicide numbers down. When we talk to people who are not familiar with that, who don't understand all of that, they go, oh, well, you can't get the numbers down to zero. They treat it purely as a number and say it's pie in the sky. You're not going to get the 6,000 in the UK down to zero. And they dismiss it, but they don't look at it to understand what it is, which is obviously very frustrating. And you and I have said this, Steve, that, you know, when we have these conversations, we do have to constantly say to people, we understand that not every suicide is preventable. And it is quite upsetting for loved ones and clinicians and service providers when they lose someone to suicide, when they feel as if they've done everything they possibly can to help keep that person alive, and they've still ended their life. We're not saying that all suicides are preventable, but we are saying that most suicides are preventable. And what became clear to me working in Australia was that everybody told me, all the professors, all the clinicians, all the people lived experience told me they believed, and the evidence showed, that most suicides were preventable. So isn't that 50% reduction? I thought, do the maths. Why have they got a target of 10% reduction if they all believe we can get a 50% reduction? I mean, none of it made any sense. So,
well, I want to ask you a question about that for a moment, because, you know, when we look at government strategy, look at the UK, the previous national suicide prevention strategy to the one announced in September 2023, the goal there for 5 years was to reduce suicide by 10% over that 5-year period. How do you feel when you hear kind of targets like 10%?
It's crazy. And we've come up with terminology now, like, you know, that's low ambition, and low ambition kills people. And that might sound melodramatic, but it's true. If the government sets a target of 10% when 50% reduction is possible, well, it's building in, you know, guaranteed loss of life and needless loss of life. It's unforgivable and it's indefensible. But we know how it happens, because it came from the World Health Organization asking every country to set a target of at least 10% reduction. But only two countries in the world went for more than 10%. Everybody went for the lowest common denominator and went for 10%, pretty much. And that institutionalizes it. And then because they're setting the bar low, they don't even reach the 10%. So, yeah, I've been working with the zero suicide community around the world, working with people with high ambition, working with people who knew how to get these numbers down, and we're getting the numbers down. And we had the transformation model, which I'd published in 2020, which the Jordan Legacy, yourself and the Jordan Legacy, very much adopted, designing out suicide, you know, tech for good and all that kind of stuff, digital human interaction systems. So we know how to get these numbers down. But if you set low ambition, if you aim low, you will end up low. And some of the initiatives we've been involved in recently, we just keep having to urge people to aim high. And we've actually had people from around the world saying, we love the Jordan Legacy because you always aim high. You're always talking about high ambition.
Let's come back to low ambition for a moment. You've written a very detailed 36,000-word response to the government's national strategy, which was published in September 2023. When I talk about this personally to people, about the low ambition of this strategy, people are saying, well, is it about it particularly that is low ambition in your view, or as we've called it, woefully inadequate?
I've said this to people like the Department of Health and Social Care, and I've said it to some of the National Advisory Group members to their faces, eyeball to eyeball. You know, I've described the strategy as woeful in its low ambition, shameful in its spin, including the statistics and the narratives, harmful in places, and at worst, it's the suicide prevention strategy that prevents us from preventing suicides. And in the critique, I go through all the reasons why, the fact that there's this priority trap. So they're obsessed about setting priorities. Basically, their mindset is, we've got limited resources, we haven't got much money, we have to set priorities, and so we'll prioritize these groups, and therefore, by definition, not these groups. So they create a competition with a small number of winners and a large number of losers. And in suicide prevention, we can't have losers. We simply can't have losers. And that is just saying those people are condemned to death. You know, a competition effectively kills people. Prioritization effectively kills people. So we need this alternative approach where we coordinate and collaborate, and everyone is a priority for someone. Also in there, I go through all the change dynamics, that in any change program, there are three key dynamics of change, the push factor where you are pushing away from a dissatisfied starting point, the pull factor where you're being pulled to a compelling, better future vision, and the involvement engagement factor, which helps everybody go on that journey. And for the government's strategy, there's no vision in there. So there's no pull factor at all. It doesn't set out a vision like our report does. The engagement is really poor. And they said, oh, but it was a lot better than last time in 2012. And I had to point out that in 2012, they involved three people with lived experience of suicide. So that wasn't a very very high base to start from. It had to be better, surely.
Well, thanks, Paul. Some really compelling reasons why this is such an important transformational change program. We're going to lead in a moment and talk about the Jordan Legacy's Zero Suicide Transformation Program and the rollout of that. Before then, you've been choosing, of course, today's tracks for us to play. We're going to play another one now, which is by Nat King Cole, and that's Nature Boy. Tell us a little bit about this choice of song.
Well, first of all, Nat King Cole makes me think about my dad. And my dad and I had a conversation once where we were talking about I had the first kind of an early iPod with 10,000 songs on it, and which blew my dad's mind because he managed to get through his entire life with two albums. And that was Nat King Cole's Greatest Hits Volume 1 and Nat King Cole's Greatest Hits Volume 2. So that was his entire record collection. So I grew up listening to Nat King Cole. Fantastic voice, beautiful man. I went for Nature Boy because it has a number of messages in there, as well as being a beautiful song. It was written by a guy called Ian Arbez, who was a Jewish hippie. He was in an orphanage in New York. He moved out to California in the early 1940s and became a Nature Boy. He changed his name because in those days, Jewish people discriminated against, couldn't get work, so he anglicized his name to George McGrew. And he wrote this song, which didn't do anything for a while until Nat King Cole wanted to record it. They found him sleeping under the Hollywood sign, and Nat King Cole sang this song. Eventually went in the Grammy Hall of Fame. And also Nat King Cole, when he was singing this song, it was at a time of discrimination against black people, severe discrimination. And this is regarded as a white song, not a black song. So when he first appeared on television singing this song, he was expected to wear a white face to sing this song. So that's how awful those times were. But out of all of this, it's a beautiful song.
Well, times have changed for the better in many respects. Let's listen to Nature Boy now by Nat King Cole, and we'll be right back with Paul after this.
This is Yawa Radio.
Welcome back. In a change to our usual show format, my guest this week is Paul Bittles, the Jordan Legacy's close collaborative partner and the driver behind the exciting Zero Suicide Society and Join the Dots tour taking place in June of this year. Paul, let's talk about the tour and more specifically about the rolling out of the Jordan Legacy's Zero Suicide Transformation Program. What can people expect?
I think it's important to emphasize this is part of a wider program. It's going to be a unique event, but it's also not in isolation. It's part of a program. And we mentioned earlier, you know, we can trace this back to January 2023. I can trace it back further in terms of all the transformational work that I was doing even before we met and the work with the global zero suicide movement. But you and I got together 2023, let's do this action research project, let's interview, you know, the usual suspects in the nicest possible way with Samaritans and Papyrus and the campaigners like the Three Dads Walking, but also let's interview people who aren't normally interviewed, whose voices aren't normally heard, lots and lots of people with lived experience of suicide in our networks. And let's just keep asking this one question: what practical actions will get the numbers down on a downward trend towards zero? And when we put that report out, I mean, there's incredible response. And we got masses of feedback from people. We got masses of further suggestions. We published the second edition of that report. We put out response to the national strategy. Effectively, we were putting forward an alternative to the national strategy. And we were designing a zero suicide society, you know, with that detailed map now of what a zero suicide society is, not just the overall definition and the route to getting there. We were putting it out there and developing this Zero Suicide Society transformation program. And I was drawing from all my transformational change experience and working with other transformational change specialists by this point to say, right, can we roll this out? So that then became what is going to be now in June, the Zero Suicide Society Join the Dots Tour. And Joining the Dots is an important part of this because it's about connecting all the issues together. It's about connecting all the people together. It's about connecting all the organizations together. In our report, we had our model, our Zero Suicide Society model, which we explained works on two levels. It's a building blocks model. It's a jigsaw picture puzzle. So the building blocks, the way to think of it, is we've got a foundation stone of lived experience involvement and stakeholder engagement. If you're not listening to people and learning from people with lived experience, you're not going to get very far in suicide prevention. We've got two keystones. One is continuous systemic action learning, CSEL. The other keystone is everyone must be a priority for someone. We can't have prioritization. We can't have losers in competitions like the government's, you know, suicide prevention grant fund, you know, 1,800 applicants, 79 winners. You know, 1,700 losers. We've even contacted the international authorities to say everyone must be a priority for someone, should be the next theme for World Suicide Prevention Day for the next 3 years. And then above that, you've got all the different building blocks in that model about healthcare, education, workplace, technical design, suicide. The other way of looking at it is this jigsaw picture puzzle. So these are all the pieces in the puzzle. And then we also have a missing piece because we never pretend that it's going to be comprehensive. There's always going to be people we might miss. We've got a constant conversation about who are we missing. It all connects together. It's like if I'm talking to Papyrus and they say we exist to look after the needs of children, young people, I will always say to them, and where do parents and grandparents come in? It's, you know, it's always a reminder of that interconnection. Similarly, if I'm talking to Age UK, you know, how do they connect with younger generations that are crucial to their physical and mental health of older people? All these things are interconnected. So the Join the Dots tour is going to connect everybody together. The plan was to say, right, okay, take all those pieces of the puzzle. Let's have a speaker on each of these topics. We might not be able to cover them all, but as many as we can. And maybe if we have some panel discussions, that will cover a lot of different perspectives. So we can have a panel discussion around education, around healthcare, around workplace, etc. And I drew up a list of all the people, all the kind of top professionals, experts in the field, like Joe Rafferty, the CEO of Mersey Care and the co-founder and chair of the Zero Suicide Alliance and author of books on how to implement zero suicide in healthcare and all the culture within healthcare organizations. So I thought, well, Joe would be top of my list there and various other professionals on there. What about all of the lived experience speakers and campaigners like Three Dads, you know, like Bob and Maggie, Abrahart? So I had these lists. And so we've got the venue with the help of North Lincolnshire Council and our collaborative partner, Faz, who's amazing. And so I then sort of sent out to all of these people on these lists, and would you like to come and speak at our conference? I'll be on a panel. And I've organized hundreds of conferences over the years. And I thought, well, I'll work on the assumption of maybe about 65% acceptance rate for this. And we've had a 90% acceptance rate. So it's a nice problem to have, but it means we've been able to really raise the bar in every sense and say, look, this is going to be the best conference ever. This is also going to have more than half of the people on our stage with lived experience of suicide.
Now, as you say, it's not just a conference. Right from that moment when the conference ends, a tour starts to roll out from the Humber right across to the Mersey over a 12-day period. So what can people expect during the tour?
People asked why we're going to Humber to the Mersey. The reason for this tour is we wanted to roll out the Zero Suicide Society Transformation Programme, and we chose Humber to Mersey because the Global Zero Suicide Summit is taking place in Liverpool, in the UK for the very first time. It's going to be in Liverpool on the 24th and 25th of June. So we thought, if we get to Liverpool for that weekend of just before that summit starts on the 24th, that would be great. And initially, we may be talking about going from Leeds or going from York, but I kept getting people contacting me saying, can you come a bit sooner? Can you come back to Hull? Can you come back to the Humber? So it's a Humber to Mersey tour. And the conference will be covering all these themes, but we'll be taking all these themes on tour as well. So we'll be talking about education, we'll be talking about healthcare, etc., and all these other issues as we go across the route. At the conference, just one other thing worth mentioning is we'll have some themes that probably have never been covered at suicide prevention conferences before. Like we've got injustice-related suicides. These are people who've been subject to systemic injustice or what I often call institutionalized cruelty, like sub-postmasters and head teachers who effectively have been killed by Ofsted. And we've actually got Ruth Perry's sister speaking at our conference, and Julia wanted to come along and talk about that experience of her sister effectively being killed by Ofsted. And so, yeah, we go off on tour and we go to York, and we've got events taking place in York and screenings of the York Ending Stigma film, Why. We've got a panel discussion on inclusion and missing pieces, where we'll talk about older people, which get no mention in the national strategy, by the way. Older people don't exist. We'll have carers, young hidden carers. We'll have gypsy and traveller communities, people who witness to suicide, groups of people who don't get a mention elsewhere. So they'll be on our panel. And then we will get to Leeds and Wakefield, Steve. where I think you're going to tell us about what's happening in Leeds and Wakefield.
I suppose a poignant moment on the tour will be the fact that we're going to have what we've now called Cycle for Life. It's not a long cycle, but everyone's more than welcome to join us on a route that will see us bring in the area where Jordan lived in Horsforth near Leeds, do a circular route, which will go to Wakefield and the significance of Wakefield, not only because it sits on that M62 corridor link there, but of course it's where Jordan worked for the Independent Office of Police Conduct. And they're welcoming us with open arms for a pit stop and refreshments at the office that Jordan worked at. So yeah, it's just going to be an event that is not a competitive ride. We're hoping we can raise a few funds through it to support the program. But it will be, yeah, a very poignant ride, certainly for me and for anyone that wants to come along on that particular route. And of course, more information about that will be coming out very soon.
So we go from Leeds Wakefield across the tour. We've got various partners want to be involved. Rugby League Cares Foundation want to work with us. We're potentially going to take over a rugby league match, a live rugby league match, where we can kind of turn it into a wellbeing and suicide prevention festival. We go across the Pennines. We go to Bury, where they've given us the theatre for the day, where we've got Rebecca Jackson, who sadly lost her 16-year-old daughter to suicide. Rebecca runs this amazing place, the Big Fandango, where it's craft workshops for kids with anxiety and women with postnatal depression and older people with chronic loneliness. We've got a Wigan, and we've got our chief energy source in Wigan is Ellie, and she's doing an amazing job. And we've got kids wanting to be involved, join the dots in schools. And we're going across to Warrington, where again, Rugby League Cares will work with Warrington Wolves. And all the way through the tour, we'll be working with various partners. We've had hundreds of people contacting us. We have a number of collaborative partners working behind the scenes, which people aren't aware of. For instance, Laura, who's been working with us and helping me, certainly, and asked if she could help in getting the word out and send some messages out to organisations across the M62 corridor that are involved in suicide prevention. And we went through the Hub of Hope to identify various organisations and those who we think should be, because they're working in homelessness and they're working in disability and they're working in discrimination and all sorts of areas that relate to suicide. And, you know, I've just discovered that Laura sent out 550 messages to people across the M62 corridor.
Now, for our listeners, of course, you better explain who Laura is.
Yeah, Laura is somebody, we get this all the time. People contact us and they just say, how can I help? And so, you know, we just say, well, how can, yeah, these are things we're doing. These are things we need to do to roll this program out. You know, what skills, experience do you have? What motivation do you have? Is there a way of working together? I mean, often people want to do this pro bono, and they've often experienced loss themselves. And, you know, this is something they want to do. And so it's a perfect marriage, really. And this is what's happened with Laura. So, you know, it's wonderful the way these things happen. When we get to Liverpool, we've got our local energy source there, Debbie Rogers. She's our chief energy source in Liverpool. Debbie's been connecting with all sorts of people. She's going to host an event on the Friday night. And I know that'll be important for you as well, Steve, because we've talked so much about Sean's Place. We've never been to Sean's Place, have we? Are you looking forward to that?
No, I really am. I think finally, I keep promising to go over, and the opportunity's now presented itself. So very much looking forward to that Friday night. Right.
Just a couple of big stories from Liverpool. We wanted to have big get-togethers. You know, we really want to have some big get-togethers in Liverpool for the big finish before, at the end of the tour, before the Global Zero Suicide Summit starts, which would be more formal. That'll be a more formal congress with invite-only delegates from 120 countries or something all getting together, like the G20 or something like that. But we wanted to be inclusive, participative, as many people involved as possible. So we were talking to Liverpool Football Club and various other people about, you know, getting a mass choir. Like, we said, can we get a mass choir on the Kop or something to all sing You'll Never Walk Alone Again, which everybody thought was a great idea unless they were an Everton fan. But apart from that, we've got various iconic locations around the city where we're planning various events, including a Hope gathering on Hope Street. Because for those who don't know Liverpool, the street where the two cathedrals are is Hope Street. And, of course, you, Steve, launched Hope for Life and the Hope for Life Conference. We've got the Baton of Hope. We've got the Hub of Hope. We've got Bernie Hollywood's Boat of Hope. He went across the Atlantic watching the videos of Hope from the local school kids had made for him. We've got Matthew Barbarell's Spaces of Hope. You know, we've got Hope coming out of our ears, haven't we? And we're in the Hope business. So we thought, we've got Hope University in Liverpool as well. Let's bring all these Hope initiatives and projects and organizations together
and have a gathering on Hope Street.
Look, people are going to make comparisons. This happens with other campaigns or events. And the question maybe is going to be asked, is this about suicide awareness? Are there actions, are there things that we're hoping and expecting people or going to encourage people to do in our communities, our schools and our workplaces throughout the tour and afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this isn't just going to be superficial awareness raising. I'm acutely aware of that. When I was in Australia, I saw so many awareness raising campaigns that just went nowhere and achieved nothing and just gave people a sort of temporary, you know, uplift in the hope, which then dissipated. And Professor Jane Perkis from Melbourne University actually did this fantastic meta-analysis of all these different suicide prevention activities and initiatives and measures around the world. She presented that at the ISP Congress in Derry in 2019. And it was something that was a salutary lesson for all the people who heard that presentation, because awareness raising campaigns were by far the least effective way of having any impact on the suicide numbers whatsoever. So we've got to look at the things that actually make a difference. It's got to be deeper education, not just superficial awareness raising. We've got to learn from all the research that we've done and that I've done over the past 10 years. You do not say, go and have a conversation. Just talk about suicide. That just terrifies people. That can traumatize people going around saying, talk about suicide. They, well, I don't know what to talk about. Where do I start a conversation? How do I continue a conversation? You've got to say, here's the training. Take the training, have a conversation. So here's the training, like go to the ZeroSuicideAlliance.com website, take the 20-minute training there. You can then have a conversation. So take the training, have a conversation is a good message. You know, avoid cliches and poorly researched and poorly thought through slogans. So no superficiality, it's got to be depth and it's got to be action focused. And this is part of a wider transformation program. So the conference, the tour, the festival are all part of a wider program, staying connected with people. We've got massive feedback from these previous tours and campaigns initiatives, and people say it had this massive high and then a massive low. It went up and up and up and then stopped basically. And then everybody disappeared. But at the maximum point at which people wanted to talk to them and to say, what do we do next? So we're not going to fall into those traps. I'm going to make sure I'm available for the month after the festival. Then I might have a holiday, right? But after the month of July, after this tour, I will make myself very available and be doing everything we can to keep the momentum going.
Well, thank you, Paul. And really encouraged by the fact that there are going to be actions and things that people can do from the tour. We're going to take a break. And in a moment, we're going to come back and talk about the festival, the climax of the tour. But before that, let's listen to another song that you've chosen. This one is Winter Song, and it's by Alan Hull of Lindisfarne.
Yeah, another one of my favourite songs. It's about kind, caring people in the world. But Alan Hull is one of the greatest singer-songwriters of my generation. A lot of people don't know him. A lot of younger people will not know him. Sam Fender knows him because he fronted a documentary about Alan Hull last year, which I'd strongly recommend. But yeah, he's just an incredible singer-songwriter. And Winter Song includes a lot of the messages that we try and get across in our suicide prevention work about thinking about these excluded groups and thinking about people who are the missing pieces.
Well, let's listen to Alan Hull and Winter Song, and we'll be right back after this.
With inspirational guests from across the world.
This is Yawa Radio.
Welcome back. Well, Paul, there's clearly a lot happening with the launch conference on June the 12th, the many other activities we've just talked about along the tour route, but you're clearly not planning for this tour to just fizzle out when we get to Liverpool then.
No, we just had this beautiful moment for our Join the Dots concert. So I was thinking, we've got bands, we've got performance poets, we've got improv comedians, we've got people with lived experience who want to stand up on the stage and say a few words. So we'll get a venue for that. And I went to all the people in our network in Merseyside. I had 15 replies within 48 hours. And lots of people said the Lock and Key. Debbie put us in touch with the Lock and Key. So I met up with Jane and Liz there. And they said, oh, it's great to meet you at last, Paul. And I said, oh, really? Well, you know who I am? And they said, oh, we've been following you and Steve and the Jordan Legacy, you know, for the last 3 years. And it's marvelous what you're doing. And we want to support everything, you know, do anything we can to support you. And so I said, oh, that's great. So I explained what we needed as a venue. Yeah, that we can do all of that in our small field, they said, right? I said, all right, you're going to tell me you've got a large field, haven't you? So yeah, our large field up to 5,000 capacity. It's used for regional music festivals. So I said, that's brilliant. That sounds perfect. So we can actually go up to 5,000, but, you know, we'll see what numbers we get for this. And they said, do you want it on the Saturday? And I said, well, we're thinking the Sunday originally, but the Saturday and Sunday would be great because it's a contained venue. We can hold the whole festival there and have another day worth of stuff going on. And so they said, look, here's the deal. We'd like to give you all of our facilities for the whole of Saturday, the 22nd of June, and the whole of Sunday, the 23rd of June, at no charge. And I just flabbergasted, and I slept very well that night. And it's just, you know, amazing. And so we've been able to get all sorts of other stuff going on there, which is brilliant, as well as the other stuff in Liverpool. So, yeah, we want as many people there as possible. And we're in a beautiful position now, because if people come to us and say, would it be possible to have a stall? We say, yes, we've got enough space for 100 stalls. You know, every training provider, every service provider, every counselling organisation, anybody, come to Liverpool, come to our Merseyside Festival, be there. Rugby League Cares, and everybody come along and just, yeah, bring your friends, bring your family, bring your work colleagues, bring your clients, just bring them all there. It's going to be probably, or we hope anyway, the largest gathering of people with lived experience ever in a single place. We're going to open up the stage for lots of people who want to get up and say a few words, you know, speaking about a loved one they've lost, a new charity they've set up. We've got 15-year-old Alfie Fitzsimmons, who was on BBC Breakfast recently, set up Alfie's Squad. He lost his dad to suicide at the age of 8. He wanted a peer support group for kids bereaved by suicide. There wasn't one in Liverpool. There wasn't one in Merseyside. There wasn't one in the Northwest region. Since gone on BBC Breakfast, they've discovered it doesn't exist anywhere in the UK. It doesn't exist at all. It's crazy, isn't it? Alfie will be on our stage.
It really is going to be exciting. I mean, how can people get involved with all these events?
Anybody who wants to be involved, like I say, having a stall, contact us. You can have a stall. Anybody who wants to be there and says, look, is it possible that I could just get up on stage and say a few words about what we're doing? We'll try and get as many people as possible over the 2 days, and we've got two long days there, right? As many people as possible in between the musicians and the poets and everything. You know, we'll just want to try and keep giving people a 5 minutes here, 2 minutes there, or 3 minutes there, whatever. You know, not a half hour here. We've got loads of time and space, so let's do it. In the mornings, we'll have other things going on around Liverpool as well, like the Hope Gathering in Hope Street. You just have to buy one ticket and you've got access to anything.
Now, all this information, of course, is going to be on the jordanlegacy.com website. We've got the Join the Dots tour menu there. We've got sub-menus for the festival, for the conference, for the tour itself. So ticket availability, all that kind of information is being added as we speak. So keep an eye on the Jordan Legacy's website for that. Paul, the tour comes to a climax on June the 23rd at the Lock and Key Festival in Bootle, as you say. What's going to happen next?
Well, the Zero Suicide Society Transformation Program was always intended it would roll out. It would continue to roll out, and that's what we will do. You and I, Steve, have had some conversations recently about where we want to go personally in this, and you've got so many things that you want to be doing, your talks. You're so much in demand for your great talks and working with schools and stuff like this. I want to focus 100% on delivering this Zero Suicide Society Transformation Program. So I'm going to be setting up a new business, a new CIC, which will be 100% focused on rolling out this Zero Suicide Society Transformation Program. You and I'll keep working together. So we'll keep doing the good stuff that relates back to this program.
You've dipped in there about your new CIC, and we've talked about this being a real true example as we go forward of two collaborative businesses, for in inverted commas, working together towards suicide prevention and demonstrating how it can really work. And I think that is a really important message. All right, let's have another quick breather, and we're going to listen to another track before we just round up today's shows. This one by Kirsty McColl and In These Shoes. Why that particular choice?
Just before I do that, the final song is going to be Hold On, I'm Coming by Sam and Dave, and that is going to be the final song played at launch conference. Hold On, I'm Coming. I mean, it just sounds like a suicide prevention anthem, doesn't it? It'll be played by a 13-piece soul and Motown band, the Detroit Sound, which of course is where the Zero Suicide movement globally started. So we're joining the dots there as well. And it's the band that's played at the Bathswell more than any other band. So lots of joining the dots there. But In These Shoes, Kirsty McColl. I love Kirsty McColl. I loved her early music. I loved her later music. I loved her lyrics. I loved her humour. And it was very sad when she struggled with her mental health, and where she had a massive problem with stage fright and often couldn't perform at all. You know, so this is this superstar, I thought, an absolute superstar, one of the most brilliant singer-songwriters of our generation. And sometimes she was just reduced to a wreck and couldn't get on the stage and perform. She did cope with that and she did get through that, which is an inspirational story. But famously, she said, I hope I don't die And people say, oh, our last album wasn't very good, was it? Now, she died sadly, but her last album was her finest work. And this track, In These Shoes, is Kirsty MacColl at her best.
Well, let's listen to Kirsty now and In These Shoes. And we'll be right back with Paul to sum up today's conversation.
This is Yawa Radio.
Bringing the feel-good feel into every single day of the week. This is Yawa Radio. Now, did you know that you can download the Yawa Radio app for Android? Just go to the normal place where you download your apps. Just search for Yawa Radio and you can put Yawa Radio on your phone and you can take us with us in your pockets. And also, if you've got an Alexa, you can ask Alexa to play Opal Radio. Now, you may be wondering why. Well, Alexa is not that intelligent and it doesn't understand the word Yawa. So just ask it to play Opal Radio. So there you go. Two new ways you can listen to Yawa Radio. Download the Yawa Radio app for Android or just ask Alexa to play Opal Radio. We are Yawa Radio, your truly well-being and happiness radio station, bringing the feel-good feeling to every single day.
This is Yawa Radio.
Well, Paul, many thanks for taking our listeners on this, what has been really an amazing journey. I hope people will appreciate how much of a deal this tour is and how they can play a role, importantly, in helping us move closer to a zero suicide society. Before we wrap up, you know the drill. We always ask our guests to share with us their message of hope, a theme which you've referred to a lot during our conversation today. So I'm going to ask you to do the same. What would your message be and who is that for?
When the ISP adopted the theme for World Suicide Prevention Day, creating hope through action. And we really embrace that because it is about creating hope through action. It's the action that creates the hope. It's the action and that impact from that action that really gives people hope, not awareness-raising campaigns and fluffy PR stuff and media interviews. It's that sustained action that gives people real hope and seeing those numbers coming down. Also, there's hope in the collaboration, you know, just the amazing degree of collaboration that gives us hope. And also years ago, I used to do coaching and counseling around what used to be called the law of attraction, but I used to call it the conspiracy to help people. And that is where we know that if somebody asks for help, if they ask in a very general sense, you can't help them because you've got to be specific to help. So we've been very specific about our needs and people have been falling over themselves to help. And it's just been yes after yes after yes. What can I do? Yes. What do you need specifically? Yes. We need a venue here. Yes, we can get you a venue there. So it's been this wonderful so far, and this is just in the planning of this, it's been a wonderful demonstration of that, the conspiracy that helps syndrome in action.
And look, thank you for being our guest today, rather than being on the other side of the microphone. So look, well, that's it for another episode of Jordan Space. My thanks to Paul, and thank you also for tuning in today. I hope you found today's discussion really interesting and insightful and really felt inspired by the tour and everything that we're doing around the work in suicide prevention at the Jordan Legacy. Now, you can make donations to support our continued work in this space by going to our website, thejordanlegacy.com, or you can get in touch by emailing hello@thejordanlegacy.com. Of course, you can engage with us on social media by following the Jordan Legacy CIC's LinkedIn company page. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, using the username @JordanLegacyUK. And of course, you can find us on Facebook at The Jordan Legacy. You can listen to recordings of all our previous shows on our website by choosing the menu Jordan Space at the top of our homepage. But now, and from Paul and myself, we'd like to wish you a safe, healthy, and above all, hopeful rest of your week. And we're going to leave you with that final track that is going to close out our conference on June the 12th at the Baths Hall in Scunthorpe. And that is Hold On, I'm Coming by Sam and Dave.
A big thank you for taking the time out to listen to this podcast from the team at Yawa Radio. Remember to check us out live online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at yawaradio.co.uk. And if you'd like to join as a guest on Yawa Radio or as a guest on the Yawa Radio podcast, we would love to hear from you. Simply email studio@yawaradio.co.uk. UK. Once again, a big thank you for taking the time out to listen. This is the Yawa Radio podcast. Copyright applies.